It's not how you perceive yourself showing up. It's how others perceive you. So you don't say you're a boss or a leader. You can say I'm a leader, but if everybody in your organization says you're a boss, guess what?
You're a boss.
Where do we start this? An answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls.
I'm tweeting that puppy.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon, everybody. Good evening, everybody, wherever in the world you are. And welcome to Sell or Die. My name is Jeffrey Gittimer, and I wrote The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute. What's up, everyone?
So it's Global Day today. We're coming to you from Paris, France.
And that is correct.
It's if you hear background noise, it's people speaking French or motorcycles or fire trucks, because we're right in the center of the city. But more important, I think it is that we're just having a good time here. It is a writing time and a learning time and a shopping time and a culture time.
It's an inspirational time.
Oh, without a doubt. And we were talking this morning about what's the difference between hanging out in Paris and doing things or shopping versus hanging out in America doing things and shopping.
All right. Coming up today, we have Dave Ferguson. He's an executive coach, and he's going to talk about relationship building, the importance of self-awareness. He's going to talk about climbing the leader ladder, not the corporate ladder, how you can go from sales manager to sales leader, and the difference between being a boss and a leader. It's going to be a great episode. But before we get into Dave, let's talk Paris.
Okay. Paris is an easy thing to talk because you walk out into the street, you go, holy shit, I'm in Paris.
I love it here.
Yeah, it's amazing. But one of the things that we find, you know, there's a lot of talk about French people don't like Americans and French people are rude. They're not. They're just transactional.
Yeah.
And it's not unlike New York City.
People say New Yorkers are rude, too.
Yeah,
and they're not. They're just, no, they're just in their own world, busy doing their own thing, thinking about themselves.
They don't have any interest in becoming involved in a conversation with anybody.
That's right.
Maybe they're coworkers, but usually that's kind of griping or they're all smoking together and doing something stupid.
So you pulled a typical Jeffrey last night at dinner. And you started talking to the table next to us.
Right.
That's typical.
Right.
And the guy who was from Denmark said, you know, I really love that you were just, you went all out and just started going for it and talking to me. I think that is so cool. And he appreciated it.
Yo, totally. And we actually were at opposite ends of the political spectrum.
Yeah.
And it's pretty interesting. But, and I won't go into the detail of it, but just let's say that we had a dialogue, not an insult party.
Right. It was a respectful conversation.
Yeah, intellectually based.
One that I don't think you could have had with another American,
no,
unfortunately.
No, I don't think so either. But let me get into the sales part of this, because there's a lot of diehards going out there go, come on, let's have something selling.
All right.
You go into any store in Paris, and there's no incentive. There's no commission paid. There's no overage. There's no bonus.
They say bonjour because they have to.
Right. Well, everyone says bonjour. And it's part of the
national
tradition.
But they don't say it like, hey, I'm so excited you're here. You might be my next customer. This is freaking awesome.
Yeah, no one says that.
They don't have that attitude.
Because people are waiting online. They want to know what you want, especially if you go into a food store.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, just so you understand, there's a food store for every different food. There's a cheese shop, there's a wine shop, there's a bread shop, there's a coffee shop.
We have a morning route.
Yeah.
I'm going to actually post it on Instagram, so if you don't follow me, you should follow me and check out the story.
Right. No one goes to Publix to get all their crap. You have to go to five or six different places to get what you want, but it's guaranteed fresh every single morning. The minute you get there.
Right. And
the bread we get is hot.
The baker is proud of his bread.
Right.
The boucherie, the meat guy, is proud of his chicken.
However, the people who give it to you pretty much without emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is there's no incentive for them to sell more or less. They make the same amount no matter what.
Right. There's no sales commissions.
So I'm asking you, do you have incentive, diehards? Are you sitting there this morning, riding in your car, whatever you're doing, riding to work, listening to this and saying, well, I don't know if everything's really going okay right now. No, no. You control. If you are on a commission, you actually control your income. If you're not earning enough money, dude, that's your fault, or at least that's your responsibility.
And everyone immediately assumes incentive equals commission equals money, but incentive has to start with you and your personal incentive, to want to help, to want to serve, to want to be great.
And if you're not, it's because you don't love your space or your job or yourself or your relationship enough to want to move forward. So think about that just in terms of who you are, what you're becoming, what and who you're becoming, and make a personal commitment to get a little bit better at it on a daily basis. Not a whole lot. Maybe you try the Gittimer Learning Academy, or you just read one of my books, The Little Gold Book of Yes Attitude, or, you know, something, the Black Book of Connection, something that will get you on your way. Something that when you wake up in the morning, you're inspired to do more. Like, I've been waking up at the crack of dawn every day, probably haven't really gotten into the time zone yet, but I write right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm flushed with ideas. I mean, it's just flowing out of me on a regular basis.
If we stayed in Paris for a year, I think you would produce 52 books. Yeah. Like, I'm convinced of it.
Well, I'll just say this. It's a very positive environment for me. And it's one that I look forward to in terms of just being free to get out there and kind of do it.
So I think this is pretty cool. You just mentioned the Gittimer Learning Academy, and Zach, our sales guy, was helping a customer last week, and he wrote him a note saying, great meeting you yesterday, love the academy, and already working on the 30-hour certification. The assessment revealed exactly what I know to be true. I suck at planning and meeting prep, so focusing on these areas out of the chute. Thanks again. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And he has personal incentive to win. And that's why he invested in himself.
And Zach is very good at extracting that from somebody just in casual conversation.
Oh, yeah.
He is a millennial, but you wouldn't know it by talking to him. He doesn't fit that description. You know what I mean? He's a millennial on fire.
Oh, man. I love millennials, Jeffrey.
Well, I love them too.
I'm technically a millennial.
That's true, Jen, and I love you.
Aww.
So there you have it, folks.
All right, I think it's time to get
Dave
into the
Ferguson.
Show. Let's get into it. It's time to sell
or
die.
So welcome, Dave. It's great to have you on Sell or Die. I know you traveled a long distance to get here.
He's here live in person in
right,
our studio.
In the studio.
I love
the
it.
The cameras are flying, and we got the great Dave Ferguson sitting here, and he's going to talk to us today about why coaches are not any good because they're not licensed.
It's great to be here. It's good to see you guys.
Good to see you too,
Jeffrey.
Yeah, so you're right from New York now, right? You're from Davidson.
All the way from Davidson, North Carolina.
So for those of you who are unfamiliar, if you live in the Northeast and you have no conception of what geography is, Davidson, North Carolina, home of Steph Curry's alma mater, is about 30 miles north of Charlotte. And it'll either take you 20 minutes to get here or an hour and a half, depending on the traffic.
And today was a 20-minute time.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, today was a 20-minute day. I think there's a lot of spring break going on. So.
Well, thank you for trekking all the way.
Thank you for coming all the way down here. Yeah. Must
have
cost you a fortune in travel.
I came for the coffee.
Got it.
No, which we haven't even given you yet.
Wish
we'll have
boom,
to
boom,
do
boom,
that.
Boom, 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 boom. And the Sell or Die mug, of course.
Yeah.
Have to have one of those. But yeah. So Dave is a coach. And a business coach, I would say, is a fair way to describe you, correct?
Primarily executive now, but...
Yeah. So he goes to companies that have executives, either sales executives or management executives or leadership executives. The C-suite is probably your easiest sell, correct?
That's it, yes.
And you coach them on being a better person.
Person, leader.
And to tell me, the one thing that I really want to know is, when you get into these C-suites, are you finding common things that most of these leaders are failing at or not as good as they want to be at?
Well, probably the number one common thing is usually sometimes the C-suite likes the idea, but not the concept of being involved initially. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I've really have gotten good at is, from a sales standpoint, I would say, is convincing them that we should start the coaching with them and not at a lower level, and then bring it into the organization.
Got it. Hmm. And how does your New York accent fare in the South?
It's pretty well. It's going pretty good. Yeah, it's calm. It's actually mellowed after 20 years. You know,
yeah, that's what
somewhat.
Happens.
No, it hasn't.
Until I get around two other Yankees.
Well, you just say coffee. It wasn't like, I want coffee. It was coffee.
It took me all of 2 minutes to be in your studio to get it back, you know.
So. Yeah. But certainly there is a difference in style of people when you come to the South. It's a lot more relaxed.
Yeah, it is.
It's not, you know, dog, eat another dog.
No, it's not. It's very nice. I've missed being here. It's been a while.
Well, the one thing that I found in Charlotte after being here for 30 years myself is the bagels are still no good.
Yeah. You know, you have to ship them in.
You're still craving a real food or real pizza.
Which I'm glad you brought up bagels, because I wanted to say something today before we got too deep into this. And you may not remember this, but I remember this very well. And I know I might have said this to you before, and I've said this, quite frankly, all over the world to audiences and to individuals. You know, when I was transitioning from my role in corporate America and to this business, you were one of the first people I called, and you agreed to meet with me because I had followed you in corporate America. I remember I used your sales book with my sales teams, used to buy them by the cases, and we met at the bagel place. And we met a couple times, but the first time I asked you, hey, this is what I'm doing. And I remember you saying, I won't use the word you used, but I hate flipping coaches, right? And I know you didn't really mean it, but we'll get back to that because I think that's a good piece for us to talk about a little bit. But you gave me some amazing advice when I asked you, hey, Jeffrey, I'm starting a coaching business and a speaking business. What are some things I should do? And you told me three or four things. And I have to tell you, as today, I coach a lot of coaches new to the business, and I give them the same advice.
Oh, cool.
So I'm passing this legacy piece on. You know, just the part about being published. I remember you said, Dave, I don't care what kind of paper, what kind of magazine, get published. And, you know, since that day, I've been writing every week. And so I want to thank you publicly now.
Aww.
In front of your audience.
Thank you very kindly.
Because I know,
that's really
I know,
cool.
I'm in this business 11 years now, and people don't last in this business too long. Very few people do. And I think a lot of it is because of the advice you and help you gave
thank
early
you.
On.
So I will you. Tell you what I found with coaches is they think they are more qualified than they actually are. They have information, and some of it's really good information. But they have a problem transferring the information in a way where the other guy or the other woman can get it and actually put it into action.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, many of them do too much talking and not enough listening.
That's true. They don't come in with a set of questions. They come in with a set of answers.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're writing content every week. You have this book, Boss or Leader, and what you're saying is you can't be both.
Yeah, I don't think you can be both. I think you have to make a choice really early on in your career, or quite frankly, on a daily basis.
Uh-huh.
You know, am I going to be a boss or am I going to be a leader? You know, we celebrate bosses. The world celebrates bosses.
I think there's like Bosses Day.
There's a National Bosses Day. It's interesting because it's part of the topic of my next book. But we celebrate bosses. We give coffee mugs that say the world's greatest boss. Jeffrey's probably got a bunch of them.
Yeah, I do.
T-shirts, yeah. National
Several
Bosses
thousand,
Day.
Actually.
Right.
I bought them for myself.
Hallmark makes a fortune on National Bosses Day.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But there is no National Leaders Day, and it's kind of funny. So a lot of us grow up working for bosses,
mm-hmm.
and so we think that's the way we really should be leading people. And really, the premise of this book is 99% of the people, 99% of your employees are going to work for one reason. It's not you. It's a paycheck.
Undercover Boss is a thing.
Oh, I love
right?
that show.
I love
and
that show.
Cake Boss.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They don't call him Cake Leader.
Right.
Yeah. Well, give us your definition of each one.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a boss manages people, oftentimes manipulating them to get to the result that person wants.
To get to the result that the boss wants.
That the boss wants.
Okay.
Right. Where a leader, I think, comes alongside and guides people and works as their coach and their team leader so that they all get what they want, which is in essence should be the vision of the organization and the vision of what they're all working towards.
So if you're a boss and you want to become a leader, what do you need to do to start changing?
you need to hire me.
Oh, well, there's a self-aggrandizing.
I love that.
But suppose somebody's in Cleveland and they don't want to hire you. What do they do now?
I think self-awareness is an important piece. I think before you go out and even think about hiring a coach, I think you have to do some self-awareness, because if you get the right coach, if you're not awake, you're going to get woken up. Mm-hmm. Okay. And to some things you really may not like about yourself. And that is, how do you show up? If you're showing up, it's not how you perceive yourself showing up. It's how others perceive you. Mm-hmm. So you don't say you're a boss or a leader. You can say I'm a leader, but if everybody in your organization says you're a boss, guess what?
Yeah, you're a boss.
Right.
So do you have your clients do some sort of survey with their people? How
yeah,
does
I do.
Work?
I do some. I do what they call 360 assessments. Mm-hmm. So in essence, you send them out to people mm-hmm. in your organization, and generally, I don't let them just pick all the people that love them. Mm-hmm. Right. We take a pretty broad group of people.
How many people actually take the 360 and say, wow, this is really right? Okay, I got that answer.
Yeah, you know, if one of the things I'm really good with people is going, helping them go through that self-awareness piece at the beginning. And oftentimes people will be 3 or 4 months into it and they've worked with a coach before, and they'll be 3 or 4 months into an engagement with me and they'll go like, when are we going to start coaching? And I go, oh, we have been.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't feel like it's goal oriented yet.
Yeah.
Because they're not to the point where I can get them there, where we can really work on some really strong goals for them, because they're not self-aware enough to really lead their team to where they want to go. Hmm.
And so you get these people and you have them do the self-awareness thing. Then what is the real strategy to get them to improve? Because they're going to tell you that, oh, I don't have time to do this. I'm too busy doing this.
Yeah. Well, if they're in a leadership role, there's nothing more important than their people on their team.
Correct.
Okay. So if you're leading a team of people, I don't like to hear a lot of time management crap that I don't have enough time for people. Mm-hmm. Because if you give the people enough time and it's the right time and it's the right leadership, then you're going to get your return on investment every single time.
Yeah, it's better to have 20 people working for you than you working for 20 people.
Exactly.
I think.
No, you're right. That's right. And absolutely. a lot of organizations are set up that way today.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
They work bottom up rather than top down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a challenge in any company. But what I would look at, though, let's talk about it from a sales perspective, because we have a lot of – we call our listeners diehards because it's sell or die. And one of our guys came up with diehard, and so we've accepted that as – those are the people that listen to us pretty much on a weekly basis. And by the way, if you're out there right now and you're not sharing this, something's drastically wrong with you. So I'm challenging you to get a coach to teach you how to share.
Diehard.
Yeah. If you're not sharing, you're not a diehard, are you?
But
yeah, that's
okay,
right.
So the manager as a leader, mm-hmm. or the sales manager as a leader, has a much different responsibility as a salesperson, as a sales manager. You know, I tell people for years, do you want to manage somebody, manage yourself. People want to be led, not managed.
Yeah.
So what are the things that a sales manager can do, if he's listening or she's listening right now, that will make them a better leader?
Well, I think you said it first, is they have to lead themselves well so that their team respects them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to be guiding people on a sales process and engaging with your team on sales techniques and tactics and strategies and relationships,
yeah, you better be
darn good at it yourself and not just mm-hmm. read a good book.
I learned it from – it's one of the things that I learned from Tom Hopkins in the 1980s. You have to be – you don't have to be great, but you have to be one notch better than everybody that works for you.
So they respect you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to make the sale in front of the guy who can't make the sale. Or the woman who can't make the
Absolutely.
Sale. And then you get, you're a rumor at that point.
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee. So go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like?
What are some of the common
things that you see that are big wins? You know, like you can come in there and you just see trends with people who are being maybe too much boss, too little
in the
leader.
Coaching world.
Mm-hmm. Too much Marsh, not enough Mellow.
And so, yeah, so I take people through a 6-step process in my leadership coaching, right? Mm-hmm. And I call it my leader's ladder.
Okay.
And so a lot of people, especially in corporate America, they want to climb the corporate ladder, but they're not leaders. And so I say, look, work with me and climb the leader's ladder and you can get anything you want in corporate America because mm-hmm. you're going to get everything you want through the leadership of people, not just the drive of yourself, because the drive at some point will limit your capacity of where you can go. And so the second step on this rung is all about connection and engagement with people. And it's interesting. I saw a post that you put out maybe yesterday or today and where you talked about the connection piece with people, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
It mm-hmm. might have been earlier today. And so I'm not stalking you, but I follow you.
That's
now.
Cool. It's all good.
I follow you now. So it's good. And so you put there the common ground piece.
Yeah.
So many leaders want to skip that engagement and connection rung on my ladder, per se,
mm-hmm.
and go right to driving results.
Mm.
And some of them very often get really, really good results. But they never get towards capacity because they try to do it by themselves, or they try to just drive people to do things rather than engaging and really connecting with people and finding common ground and making the vision common between them and then driving results beyond where they even thought they could.
Hmm. I want to throw something at you that we both had, that Jennifer and I have in common. We both grew up in a manufacturing environment and our fathers both ran the company. And not by coincidence, but our fathers arrived early and said hello to everybody in the plant before they went to work.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, they were loved.
Yeah. Go figure.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
In fact, when I started to work there, my dad's name was Max, and they called me Little Max,
aww.
Which I thought was like the biggest compliment on the planet.
If my dad missed someone to say hello to that day, they had like 200 people in their factory, because maybe the person was in the bathroom or a different room when my dad was going around. They'd come running in, Mr. Gary, are you mad at me? You didn't say hi, you know.
Yeah, I miss those days, right? You know, yeah. I mean,
oh, yeah.
We used to have high touch. Difference. It was important. People did back then. Today, you get too busy.
How could you be too busy to say hello?
That's crazy. I know people that have 5 or 6 people in their
but
offices
they
and
have
never
that,
say hello.
They have that little, not just hello, but the little engagement, like, how's your family?
How was your weekend?
Yeah,
what's
how's
going
your new
on?
Baby?
Yeah.
They know intimately what's going on, and the person feels as though there's a yep. – there's something in common
mm-hmm.
that they have that personal touch. I right. know yeah. the boss. I can talk to the boss.
Right. I can't wait to get to the office in the morning to say,
yeah,
hi,
say
to
hi to everybody.
It's,
yeah.
it's
almost everybody.
You know, the whole connection thing is really interesting. So, I mean, let's just take your organization for an example, Jeffrey, mm-hmm. if you don't mind me going down this road, I hope. I've been in this office, I don't know, 10 times maybe over the last 10 years, right,
mm-hmm.
for various reasons. I've connected with all 3 of your daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Your youngest daughter,
mm-hmm.
your fourth, right?
Yeah.
But I'm connected with all 3 of your daughters on social media. I've seen them all before in social settings. I had conversations with one of them about a charter school for their daughter at one point because I was mm-hmm. involved in the board on that. And we've all built some form of a relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now, I didn't build a relationship with your daughters to try to get to you, okay?
No, you already had me.
Right. I built a relationship just because that's what we do. And I go back to your post earlier today is about you can't build relationships with people if you're not willing to take the time to find some common ground.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now,
yeah.
I want to expand that one more thing. You just came over today. Was everybody friendly?
Absolutely.
It's disgustingly how friendly we are.
It's your culture.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's your culture.
Exactly.
Your culture is to be warm and welcome.
Actually, mostly everyone were out to lunch.
But. Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Listen, we are a greeting company and we are a friendly company.
Well, we want to help.
Whether you're on the phone or yeah. whether you're here in person.
For sure.
Or even email.
But you've built that culture.
Yeah. Well, we live the culture.
Yeah. And it's going to be part of your legacy one day. And that's another thing. People in my coaching, I work with a lot of people on what you're going to have a legacy one way or another, right?
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you define it for
exactly.
yourself, right? I don't want society defining my legacy.
I define it as, what do you want your kids to say at your funeral?
That's an easy way.
And,
yeah, I like
and
that.
So I have a personal philosophy that they would start the meeting with. You know, when you have a funeral, it's a meeting. You bring a bunch of people in, You have a leader.
There's an agenda.
Exactly. There's usually whiskey in the back somewhere.
Yep. The Lord's Prayer. Yeah. You're ready to go.
People always ask me what they want, what I want people to say about me at my funeral.
Uh-huh.
He's still alive.
Exactly.
Well, remember the tombstone test? I think it was Richard Carlson, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff.
They put the mirror under the guy's nose?
Well, he had this one chapter. It was just the tombstone test, and you had to write during
What do you want to
tombstone? What do you want to be defined
by? You had to write the
tombstone
date, too, which I thought was eerie.
That's eerie.
So in coaching, what I do is real early on is one of the things I do with them is I kind of, depend on what age they are, but I'll go 60th or 70th or 80th birthday party. Who are you going to invite, and mm-hmm. what are they going to say about you?
Yeah.
It's not, like that.
Not
cool.
as morbid.
There's also another element of that, and the gravestone is from 1946 to 2058. But it's the dash that represents mm-hmm. your whole life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part you got to concentrate on.
Oh,
I like that one. Yep.
Yeah.
So speaking of dashes, I have nothing to say. but that you have a constant challenge to be with clients who all have different needs, correct?
Absolutely.
So you have to keep kind of track of where you are with those. How do you keep track of your customers?
Well, I use a note system, obviously, that works on all my devices. So mm-hmm. I use Evernote, which a lot of coaches do use. There's some other fancier dashboards out there, but I don't need all the bells and whistles. I've built really good relationships with my clients. I don't generally turn over too much.
Mm-hmm.
I've got, I'm going on 11 years in this business. I've got some people at 9 years.
Wow.
My average client stays with me 3 to 4 years. We build relationships beyond the coaching relationship, but I'm still able to coach them and hold them accountable. And,
cool.
Mm-hmm. And I really like that part of the business. They sell for me more than I sell for myself.
Do you send them stuff?
I do send them stuff.
What do you send?
I send them cards. I go to some of their family events, some mm-hmm. of their kids' events. I send them gift cards sometimes, bottles of wine. Depends.
That's pretty
what their
original.
Personal preferences. You know, if you mm-hmm. connect with them, you find out.
You find out what they're interested in.
Yeah. What do you send? Give me an example of something that you've sent that's personal. Because I just had one happen to me last week. It just blew my doors off.
Well, so I've got a buddy of mine that's a huge bourbon freak. And he's mm-hmm. a client. He's been a mm-hmm. client of mine for like 4 years. And so I'm at another friend's house not too long ago who can get really good bourbon. And
like beyond the liquor store
yes,
bourbon?
Yeah. Got it. Right.
Some moonshine.
Secret off the shelf.
And I'm like, what
bourbon?
Do I have to do to get a bottle of that for a really good client of mine?
Yeah.
You know, and so it happened. And so I sent it to him. And he was really, really happy. And it's just because he knew he couldn't get it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's one of those things. I think it is, it's finding something different. You know, some people just send the same thing to people all the time. I do things with my clients. Like, we do stuff. Like,
shoot pool.
We have fun. We go, we've shot pool and I'm allowed to stink at pool. We go have pizza and beer and we'll go to Top Golf or we'll go where we just
love
do
Top
stuff.
Golf.
Yeah, we love Top Golf.
You know, when I was in Singapore, we went up on top of that. The Royal, the Sands there with the ship on top of the hotel and up there and had a great time one night. And just,
cool.
We just do different stuff.
Do you know that, and I don't want to mention this because it seems to be a running theme, but Mike.
We were going to go one episode, but we just broke it. Here we go.
No. my most recent client gave me an autographed football by Nick Foles, and it was a Super Bowl game-used ball.
Pretty cool.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
And
that's huge for you.
Nick Foles, the quarterback of the Eagles, who beat the Patriots 41-33 in the Super Bowl.
That's a huge gift for you.
Huh?
That's
I almost cried. I almost cried because they made a big fanfare out of it at the end of my talk. And
you couldn't wait to show it to me. You like sent me a picture of the bag. Like, you're never going to guess what's inside.
Does he know you're a sports collector?
Pardon?
Does he know you're a sports collector?
No. He didn't know. He knew I was an Eagles fan.
He loves the Eagles. Yeah.
He knew I was an Eagles fan, and he knew that I was a person who would appreciate something that was personal. I mean, we already had a great relationship. We have with the CEO of the company, we already have a texting relationship, which I think is the closest relationship you can get.
Absolutely.
And I don't know how you are with your clients, but I don't want a client that I can't text.
Right.
I've got all of mine on text right now.
So the challenge for him was to find something because he wanted to do something. And man, it was a grand slam home run,
above
bottom of the
beyond.
Ninth, walk-off home run, win the World Series.
That wasn't easy to get.
No, it was not
that
easy.
Was not easy
they went through the story of how they had to get it. But listen, the bottom line is that ball will sit on my desk or on some kind of special place forever. And I'll think of that guy every single time I look at the ball. It's impossible not to.
I'm going to think of him every time I pass
exactly.
it.
Yeah, exactly. Dave, do you ever set aside time to think about what you can do for clients? I mean, do you ever pencil that into your calendar?
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, I've got a little bit of a process that helps me with that. And part of their responsibility is to feed that a little bit prior to when we're going to meet or talk.
Do they send you like a list of things that they want to talk about?
Yeah, I send them. They get an automated 3 to 4 days before we're going to talk. They get an automated form from me. They complete and send it back to me.
Got it.
Which kind of helps with agenda so that we're just not finishing off where we left the last time.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to feed it. See, a lot of people don't understand that relationship. It's not the coach's responsibility to create the agenda. It's the coachee's responsibility to create the agenda. I am coaching you. I'm coming alongside to help you. I can't help you if I don't know what your current needs are.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we talk about long-term needs and challenges, but sometimes there's something on your plate.
Yeah, but as a coach, you have to understand the difference between a problem and a symptom.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so they may send you a symptom, and then you identify the problem, correct?
Right. Yeah, they feel something, right? They feel something right now. And all of a sudden that becomes urgent to them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, my people aren't communicating well. Yeah. Dude, that's a symptom.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a way, way bigger problem.
Let them say something.
And it may be you.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, right. Absolutely. But that goes back to that self-awareness piece.
Yeah, it is. And you know, look, someone out there said good leaders ask great questions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't, this may even be your, Selwyn's not telling, right?
Right. Correct.
And
Selwyn's
so
asking.
In essence, creating a relationship with someone is a form of sales,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they bought you.
Well, I would say a form of sales is creating a relationship.
Right. Yeah. Without a doubt. And if you don't have that, you're never going to get – it'll be a transaction.
Right.
It won't be a relationship.
Right.
It won't be a long-term – you know, I bought three pairs of underpants at the store, and I left with them. And so if you have an underpants transaction with your customer, it's over.
Yeah.
So I look at it as the people hire me to give a speech. Well, I don't want to give a speech and go. I want to give a speech and have them purchase my Gittimer Learning Academy. And that way I at least have 1 year with them. And that gives me an opportunity to go deeper. I'll invite them here to the studio and we'll talk about what their agendas are and what their long-term plan is. And then I can probably, you know, like the people that start with the Learning Academy, they stay with it.
Hmm. Well, you do some needs establishment, obviously. So just having them and asking them some questions, there's some needs establishment.
I don't look at it as needs establishment. I look at it as – I mean, that's not how I look at it in my mind. I look at it as what are they hoping to do in the next 5 years? What are the outcomes that they're hoping for? And if I can get to the outcomes, I can fill whatever they need into that spot.
I'm curious to know what you recommend to other coaches out there.
Well, I'm very process oriented, but I also allow people to spark the agenda, right? And so I will take people through a process in coaching, and I will take the coach through the same process, mm-hmm. where and they don't feel like they're going through a process.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit of an art I've developed. I wasn't always like that. It took me a while to get there, but it's an art that I've developed. And so they don't even realize they're going through this, in essence, growth process in themselves. Mm-hmm. And until they start seeing how people communicate with them differently, interact with them differently, and in essence, and sometimes there's some stress relief. Some of these people, I work with some executives that are just
under the gun.
Oh my god!
and
travel constantly, and have a young family at home, and there's a lot of balance type issues. You know, look, time management comes up all the time. My answer to that is, you know, we all have. 365, 24/7, it's your lack of priority management that's the issue.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And so I would do a lot of work on that. I do a lot of decluttering with people, getting rid of the stuff that's not important. You know, we really work on what are the three things you should spend 90% of your working hours mm-hmm. doing? Mm-hmm. What are those three areas? Everything else, either
even if it's five things that you spend 90% of your time with, takes away all the admin. It takes away all the micromanaging. It takes, you know.
It takes away sometimes some of the easy stuff, and people like to do the easy stuff.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know Les Brown, right?
They like to do the stuff they can check off.
Yep. Yeah. One of the things that Les Brown said to me years ago, I'll never forget, is that he goes, you know, Dave, when we do what's hard, life gets easy. When we do what's easy, life gets hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You got to do the hard stuff first. Your life gets easier. Right?
I like that. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah. What if you got it from Jim Rohn?
I don't know. I heard it from Les. So you know how the quotes work, right? I mean, exactly. I've probably quoted you 100 times and said, I can't remember who said that.
Yeah, you say it enough, great. You think it's yours. But if you do the hard things, life becomes easy. When you do the easy things, life becomes hard.
You know, everybody wants to do the easy stuff today, but they want a great life.
Yeah.
But their life just gets harder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I say that I get the millennial. Look, I get the, God, as a coach and a speaker, I get the millennial question all the time. And, you know, my answer is pretty much the same on that. You probably get a lot of
question
that.
About managing millennials.
Yeah. How do you lead millennials? Mm-hmm. I can answer it really quickly.
How?
The same way you lead everybody else.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. However, the millennials have an issue of prejudice, and they're prejudiced against the people who are not as good as they are technologically.
Oh, there's definitely some of that.
So if you are a leader and you can't coach your millennials on technology, then you're going to have a problem.
But I don't think that's just technology. It's really anything. If you try to coach me at something that I'm better at than you are, I'm not going to accept it.
Listen, that one weakness, you know, people who are in our age bracket.
If you're for yourself over there.
Yeah, but from 40 to 65,
uh-huh.
They're not going to be as technologically advanced as an 8-year-old.
No, you're right.
And they're not going to definitely be advanced as a millennial, and that's the first thing they're going to look at.
Jeffrey, you're pretty technologically advanced.
Yeah, but I'm not the norm.
Yeah, he is.
I mean,
he's more technologically advanced than I am.
Yeah.
But here's the thing in leadership. There's a word in leadership that doesn't get used often enough, and it's humility.
Mm-hmm.
So if I am leading a team of people and they need technological help, I'm going to either promote one of them and let them do it, or I'm going to bring in an expert, because you can't coach people effectively on things you're not good at.
Correct.
And so many coaches, even I'll go back to the coaching thing.
You fake it, they're going to call you on it in 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
And so many coaches try to do that. And I was guilty of it early on, saying, you know, when I first started my business, oh, yeah, I can coach somebody on this and I can coach somebody on that. And you know what? You can't. Not effectively.
It's like the sales leader trying to coach a salesperson never having held a bag.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty hard.
Mm. Yeah, if you haven't carried the bag.
It can be done, but it's really hard.
If you have not carried the bag, you're going to have a real hard time convincing others how to carry theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you're going to be a boss.
Especially in hard sales situations where you're B2C, door-to-door, or you're B2B and you're making cold calls. Dude, if you haven't carried that bag, don't even.
Yeah.
Don't even start.
That's one I like that company. What's it, Southwestern? You heard of Southwestern?
Yeah. I mean, they got to bang on doors and sell bottles.
Everybody that's moved up, they have brought nobody in. You didn't start selling books door to door when you were in college.
You know Rory Vaden?
Yeah.
He's a good kid.
He is good.
Yeah.
Take the Stairs.
Exactly.
Good book.
Yeah, he's a good kid.
Cool. Well, this has been great. So where should everyone go to get your book?
Yeah, Dave.
Well, Boss or Leader, you can go to my website, livingtolead.com, LIVING.
TOLEAD.com. Got it.
Or it's on Amazon. If you want them personally autographed, go to my site, send me a note.
Cool.
We'll send them out to you that
way.
There's also
put it in the show notes too.
Just by the way, this is the second edition. So obviously he has got past the first edition and reread his book. When you reread your book, what did you find?
You know, this book is interesting because it's a very simple book.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wrote this book after reading a quote that 83% of high school graduates will never read a book past the first chapter.
Hmm.
And so my initial chapter on the book was on vision, on how a leader creates a vision versus how a boss creates a vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved the chapter on perseverance up front, hoping that people would persevere past first chapter. And have. It's interesting. It was rocket science on my part, but I don't think any rocket science was present.
See you're still using your bar mitzvah picture, though, here for me.
I got that from you.
Well, this is an awesome book, and we will put the links in our show notes on sellerdiepodcast.com.
Good.
That was a very interesting interview because it touched on stuff that you don't normally hear in a leadership conversation.
I love Dave Ferguson's line about it's about climbing the leader ladder,
not the corporate ladder. Yeah, I agree. I like that too. But I think that there's more to understand here because there are many diehards out there who are salespeople and may not think of themselves as leaders. When in fact, the essence here is to lead the customer and become a leader in the eyes of the customer or the client in order to become a more valued relationship rather than a transactional one. I can buy from anybody, but I'd rather buy from somebody that I like, and I'd rather buy from somebody that I trust, and I'd rather buy from somebody that I can have a conversation with, and I'd rather buy from somebody that I'm friendly with. And that's, I think, what Dave is looking at here. He's trying to build the persona of the person so that they become a better person first, a leader second, and then whatever their job is third.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because most of the people you and I buy from are leaders in their sales careers. They're not just salespeople. They're leading.
But I agree. However, think about how these relationships started. They started on a friendly basis.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And the people that I've, you know, we're here in Paris, and we have lots of friends here mm-hmm. based on friendliness, interactions, talking, and over a period of time becoming deeper friends or significant friends.
It's funny. My grandma used to throw an annual barbecue, and everyone would make fun of her that she was inviting all of her vendors. But she was inviting her lawnmower guy, and she was inviting the guy who painted her house, and the guy, you know, all the people that did work for her because they were her friends.
Yeah.
You know, they became her friends over the years. And I just think that that's the way you do business.
Well, think about it this way. Nobody else does it.
Right.
Yeah. If you're going to throw a backyard barbecue, the last person you're going to invite is the guy that painted your house.
I'm telling you, my family would crack up with all the people on her list. But it was true. She considered them her friends.
I think that there's an opportunity as a diehard listener right now to pick up on Dave's ideas and challenge yourself. What are you doing to be perceived as a leader? And it doesn't mean you're the CEO. It doesn't, you know, because Dave talks to a lot of CEOs and a lot of corporate people, but you may not be that, and therefore you may not think this is about you, but it's not true. It is about you.
It's like the book club book that we did.
Yeah, the salesperson is a leader. Yeah.
Yeah, Stop Selling, Start Leading.
Yeah.
And it's that concept that you can't just be a boss, you have to be a leader.
And you can't just be a salesperson.
You have to be a leader.
Agreed. And the first thing you have to do in your own mind and heart is believe that you are, or believe that you're capable of it, and then going out and practicing it. What are you doing that's valuable beyond your product to help somebody else with whatever their struggle is? And where it's not just a matter of volunteering at a charity, but rather why don't you go over to your best customer's place and volunteer for a couple of days of work and help them with their shipping or help them with their, you know, whatever they're doing, reorg, and prove that you're a value provider, not just a sales guy.
I know a salesperson in New York who sells copiers, and she's phenomenal at copier sales and building relationships. But what makes her stand apart is that she finds out immediately what their charity organization is. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to be working with you. I want to know, what do you invest your time in? Where do you put your heart and soul mm-hmm. in? And then she gets on their board to help organize the event, and she becomes a leader for that.
That's cool.
It's really cool.
Yeah, I think that you have to look at it from a standpoint of, you only have X amount of time to invest.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you have 50 customers, and if you give them an hour a week each, you're going to run out of time.
You'll never sleep. You'll need a lot of Death Wish coffee
for
that.
You certainly have to know. I agree with that. You certainly have to know what's important to them and what rings their emotional button.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, play on that side of the fence rather than simply to go in and how's it going? Do you have any needs? Those days are so over.
One of the other things that Dave talked about is the concept of just something simple like saying hello in the morning. What in what world do we live in that people don't think they need to go into the office and say hi and to everybody?
I agree.
I don't understand that. Is it because we text now?
I'm going to go back to, oh man, I hate to say this. I'm going to go back to 1977.
You were alive?
Yeah, in 77. And I did a consulting job here in Paris, just outside of the city, a place called Orgeval, at Atelier Bowman. And this guy had 200 employees, and every single morning, he would go around when he came to work and say hello to every single person. Now, in France, people don't understand this. When you have a job for life. And if you fire somebody, you pretty much have to give them a year's pay in order to be able to let them go on their merry way. So you have to be real careful.
Quite the labor law.
Yeah. And you can go to a doctor, get them to write a note, and you'll stay out of work for however long you want. And so this guy had, in France, one of the top 1% of employees who showed up for work every day.
Wow.
Only because he became friendly and personally involved with every single person that worked for him. His productivity was high, his attendance was exceptional, and he was loved as a boss.
Wow. That's so cool.
It's way cool.
That's the power of not just being a boss, but of being a leader.
Yeah. So, and he didn't really consider himself a boss. He considered himself one of the people.
Mm.
And as a result of that, he became involved in intellectually and emotionally with a lot of people. He would talk about football or family or whatever. Mm-hmm. Speaking of football.
Yes.
France is in the quarterfinals now.
Oh, yeah.
Of the semifinals, actually, of the World Cup.
The excitement in the city right now.
Oh, yeah, phenomenal.
I'm sure in the entire country, but where we are is insane. It's amazing.
And there's French flags flying all over the place. There's people walking around wearing a French flag.
The people are sitting as far as almost sitting on the street to watch the game.
To watch it, watching the match was absolutely amazing. They were cheering like if, when they scored two goals. When they scored the first goal, I'm looking around like, what the hell happened? The whole city kind of erupted into.
Yeah, and then when they won, the horns were honking. Yeah. It was just mayhem. It was pretty cool.
Now, this isn't just like Boston winning something or Seattle winning something or Philadelphia, of course, winning something.
Philadelphia won something?
Yeah, they won the Super Bowl. So,
Okay,
but this is the country winning something.
Mm-hmm.
So they were screaming in Bordeaux. They were screaming in Aix-en-Provence. They were screaming in, you know,
everywhere.
Yeah. So be aware that there's a high national pride in the winning of this match.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder where our national pride is sometimes. Now, I don't want to make a political statement, but I do want to say that we as a country, when it's the Olympics or whatever it is and the USA team is playing, we need to cheer for them a little louder, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And for not just like look in the paper the next day to see what happened.
Yeah. And if you want to turn that inwards to yourself, where's your sales pride? Where's your service pride?
Yep. Are you willing to wear your company's flag?
Yep.
Are you willing to drape it around you and go into some place and go, this is my company?
Or your company's pin or your company's shirt.
Yep. So
with pride.
And Dave was very on point today talking about what responsibilities do you have to take in order to become a better person, thereby a better leader?
Yeah.
And I think that there's a huge lesson here. I'm hoping that you as diehards will listen more than once. We should wrap up just a little bit from what do you want to say?
Well, Dana? Just before we go, we now have a Facebook group.
Oh.
And you can join it. Just search for Sell or Die. It's the official Facebook group. Jeffrey
yeah,
and I
rewrote
are gonna be
the rules. They're now
there.
Friendly and open. So when you join the group, it's like, just show up.
Join the group. We'll ask you a bunch of questions to get you introduced to everybody.
Right.
And we just want friendly, fun, engaging, and informative dialogue. And we'll be participating in it as well. So search on Facebook for the Sell or Die official Facebook group.
And we will see you there. I will see you there. Jen will see you there. There'll be videos posted. There'll be all kinds of stuff. We have a real, I would say, pretty good plan.
Oh, yeah.
Going into the future. And we're looking at really expanding our Sell or Die outreach, going to 5 days a week, probably in another month or less, and making it better for you, the salesperson, to go out and earn more, learn more, earn more, have a better time at selling, because you are the diehards.
And with that, we are out. Thank you guys for joining us today. And always, if you like what you've heard, subscribe, share, rate, review. And we'll see you next time.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling.
And I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute.
And I'm challenging you to get out there and sell something, even if your ass falls off.
Did you know that this podcast is now a part of the Sell or Die Network, a network of the best podcasts on sales, business, and personal development? You do now. The Sell or Die Podcast Network is committed to bringing you podcasts that will help you become more successful and more fulfilled. Whether you're on the treadmill, at work, or in traffic, the Sell or Die Podcast Network will help you learn more and earn more in a New York minute. All you need to do is visit sellordienetwork.com and make our podcasts a part of your daily success routine.